everybody. We're back. The Bristol Boys are in the house. December 10th, 2025. Fresh off of our remote episode at the Bristol Sports Hall of Fame. What a night it was, guys, wasn't it?
Awesome.
We're in the studio.
It's all right.
The Don... Oh, come on, man. We're in the Don Father studio. Angry Jay's in the house. Crocker just joined us late from a dinner date. We're hoping that Lottier to Commish stop by. Studio engineer Kevin Ross. Studio engineer extraordinaire Kevin Ross in the house. Just troubleshooting left and right. Trust me. Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram. We want to thank one of our major sponsors, Joe Moriello, the Senior Vice President of Capital Securities. And if you go with Joe, just trust him with your money. He will give you a life.
Well planned.
Skygazer Brewing, John Tice, still has one of the most delicious golf beverages out there, his pink lemonade shandy. Greg Hunt and Twister Baseball Clinics, thanks for sending those checks in. We have a special guest tonight. Okay, we're going to play a little game called Guess Our Guest. Our guest for this episode is a professional baseball umpire in the major leagues. He's active. August 29, 2025, became the oldest umpire in Major League history. He made his debut as a reserve umpire in the National League from 1991 to 93. Can anyone guess out there who it is?
How about Phil Cuzzi?
Oh, you got it.
Hey!
You got it. Hey, welcome, Phil. Thanks for having us. Thanks for joining us on the show.
What does he win?
It's in the mail. Just check it. UPS is running a little behind on with the Christmas season, but thank you so much for joining us. I want to jump right into, the highlights of your career, but can we go back and have you just talk a little bit about the grind and the path for one to become a major league umpire? Like, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's you use the word grind, and that's a good as any to describe it, because, you know, when you first start out, you go to umpire school, and although it's a little bit different now, back when I went out umpire school, it was 1985 was my first year, but I had been to the umpire school 3 years prior. You know, the bad thing about it is, you go there and you don't know what to expect. You think you know everything about baseball because you played Little League and you know, every year after that. And you get there and you realize that playing baseball has nothing to do with the job that they're trying to teach you about umpiring. So, you know, when I first went to school, there were privately owned schools. There were two of them. Joe Brinkman, Harry Wendelstedt, and, you know, we had 100 guys, and maybe out of the 100, maybe 20 went into the minor leagues that year. Now, in fairness, not everybody who was at the school wanted to go into professional baseball. You may have had high school umpires that were trying to get better to become college umpires. You might have had Little League umpires that were trying to become high school umpires. And you had Canadians just wanting to get out of the cold because it was in January in Florida. So, you know, but then once you got into the minor leagues, you know, then it was a whole nother ball game. So, you know, talk about a grind. And we didn't know what we didn't know. We didn't know what to expect. And, you know, back then, at that level, rookie ball, New York Penn League, just you and one other guy. Ooh. And one guy signs up as a rider, the other guy signs up as a driver, and they give you a schedule, and off you go. And, you know, I remember the first year I was working with someone that you may know, Richie Dawn, and he was the driver, I was the rider, and we had a meeting in Auburn, New York, and then our first assignment was in Watertown, New York. In order to get there, we drove through Syracuse, and there was a AAA game going on. Remember that the rookie league starts mid-season, so it was like June, because it's like a half season. And so we thought we were big shots to be able to get into the ballpark for free, and We went to the game. We saw the AAA umpires. They took us out for a beer and pizza after that. And by the time we got to the hotel, it was probably, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. It was a little roadside hotel, and there wasn't a light on anywhere. But there was a payphone at the end of the parking lot. And we said, well, we better call because we're supposed to, you know. And so I call. I wake the guy out of bed and thinking that we're, you know, these big shots coming in. I said, yeah, this is Phil Cuzzi and Rich Dawn, and we're New York Penn League umpires, and we're supposed to be staying at this hotel. He said, well, what are you calling me at this hour for? Just take a room that there's not a car in front of the door. The door's open, and come see me in the morning. So we thought that, you know, what was going on. But it is a grind. And you know, you go through rookie ball, A ball, double A, triple A, and you get the triple A, and you hope that you get a look. And, you know, it wasn't until my third year in triple A that I did get a look. And, you know, and then you think it's competitive to that point, but that's when the competition really starts. So it is a grind. And, you know, a player can if he gets released from a team, there's 29 other teams that he can go to. But if we get released, there's really nowhere else to go.
Wow, that's cool. Phil, did you say you had a beer and a pizza and you got home at 2 in the morning? I want to be at this meeting.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding. You said you thought you knew everything about baseball, so that sounds like all the parents of the kids that coaches have to deal with today because they know everything about baseball. But can you talk about specifically the life in the minor leagues versus the life in the big leagues? I mean, we know about the players. We've seen the documentaries and read the books. They go from buses to planes. What is the difference for an umpire?
Well, as I started to say, you know, you're in a car with one other guy, and you're driving everywhere. So, you know, New York Penn League, we had, you know, I mean, off the top of my head, I have to think about the cities that we went to, but you know, it was just you worked the game. Usually, we're in town for I don't know, but you know, in the big leagues now, we're in the town for one series. So the series could be two games, mostly three games, and then there's some four games. But back in the minor leagues, you might have been in the town for a week, and then you just you know you pack up your bag, you pack up your car, and off you go. But you know, it's just you and one other guy. So I've always been lucky that I've had decent partners, but, you know, guys I got along with. But, you know, but not everyone has been as fortunate because personalities come into the game. You know, you get along better with some guys than others, like anywhere else. But you're just with one other person. And, you know, and that is a... If you don't get along, that could be for a very long season. But, you know, that's the difference with the minor leagues because you're driving. When we get to AAA, we did take some flights. I think it's different now. I think they have fewer flights. They stay longer and they do drive. But, you know, AA was the same thing. You know, we had was a three-man system, but you still drove. But, I mean, our longest drive, I was in the Southern League, was like from Memphis to Jacksonville, Florida. So, you know, you're working a game, you're driving all night, and you might get in at, 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, it's just a lot different. The big leagues, of course, were flying everywhere. I mean, just about everywhere. You know, if we're going from Philly to Baltimore, you know, we would drive or we might take the train. But the travel is still a grind. Especially with the airlines, you know, today, I was thinking about the trouble that they had, you know, a month ago, thinking about if it were during the season, what would have happened. And I'm sure that guys would have missed games and it would have been, it would have been a disaster, I'm sure. But
hey, Phil, how many games does a major league umpire do in a season now?
We do about 120, 125, something like that. Because we get 4 1-week vacations.
You guys should play for the
and
Rangers.
Then yeah, and then we're usually in replay for a week at a time for 3 weeks. So that's 7 weeks off the field, which is a nice break. You know, at first when we first went into the replay room, you know, we're thinking, oh, what's this going to be like? You know, because, I mean, you know, we're not really good at adapting to change. And we've had so much change since I started. But it really turned out, and especially for me, being in New Jersey, you know, the Replay Center is in Midtown Manhattan. So I'm home. That's an extra week for me at home. And, you know, like I say, usually there for 3 weeks. So that's 3 extra weeks at home, which is a big deal.
Phil, I want to ask you this. Just go back to the minor leagues real quick. You said you mentioned a 2- and a 3-man crew. How much different, and is it a lot harder? To me, it seems a lot harder than the 4-man crew. I would imagine you guys just starting out and running to bases when balls are hitting the outfield from behind home plate and stuff. That has to be kind of a challenge, especially for a new umpire.
Yeah, but you know, that's all that you knew at that stage of your career. You know, I mean, depending of, even if you had a lot of experience, which I really didn't before going to umpire school, you know, guys work high school games, even college games. You know, chances are, unless it's like a decent college, you're working 2-man. So we're used to that. But yeah, you know, you could have a situation where the plate man, if guy hits a triple, and if the base umpire goes out on the ball, that plate man is coming from behind the plate and cutting a, you know, around the mound, and you know, it's his responsibility to watch, you know, first, second, and if there's a play, a third. But so, you know, it's a different game completely. We, you know, we thought what a relief it was to be working 4-man. I'm sorry, you know, you get to AAA working 3-man. We thought what a relief that was until you get to 4-man, and then once you work 4-man. You know, that there's nothing really like that. But on occasion, and it happened to us this season, where we had 2 umpires. Dan Bellino got hurt, and Tony Randazzo was working the plate, got left the game with a concussion. And Bellino, an inning or two later, wound up pulling his hamstring, and he said, "Guys, I'm not going to leave the field because it's just the two of you." I mean, had Randazzo not been hurt, he would have left. But he said, he was working first. He said, "I'm just going to stand at first. I can't go anywhere else." So it almost was like working a 2-man system. But on occasion, something like that happens. But never to be down to 2. But, you know, it's happened on occasion where plate umpire, get hit, leave the game, and then you have to revert back to a 3-man system. And you kind of have to, you know, it's much different than what we're used to, but, you know, you just have to adapt to it and adjust. But it's a huge difference working just a 2-man system, which most of the minor leagues, with the exception of AAA, is.
Hey, I was told to ask you about Art the Tasmanian Devil, so...
Oh, you know, that believe it or not, my first professional ejection was Art Mazmanian, and it was because of Richie Dawn. He was working the bases. I was working the plate. He had a play at second base. Art Mazmanian came out to argue, and, you know, no big deal. This is a typical, and as he's walking back to the dugout, he passes me, and he says, "Your partner's outmatched out there." And I ran him because I said, he said, "What do you mean? I just told you, you're not going to talk about my partner like that." So my first, I always, you never forget your first, right? So Richie was my first partner, and he was the first ejection that I had was defending him.
Nice.
All right, Phil, I'm going to throw out a few things too. We just want to go, like, first thing that comes to your mind. Who are the worst managers you ever had to deal with?
The most unfair manager that I ever had to deal with was Ozzie Guillen.
Really?
He would just come out, and it didn't matter what happened, what the play was. I don't know how many times I've ejected him, but I know that I ejected him every time he came out except once. And he would just start calling you names and cursing at you, and you know, never once talked about the play, never once wanted to ask you, you know, about the play. So I even remember him blasting his own players in the press. So to me, he was, and you know, I had him as a player, and he was jovial. He was fun, laughing, joking. He was then he became a coach, and he was a little bit more standoffish. Then when he became a manager, you know, I think he was just, you know, I wouldn't I wouldn't call him terrible. I would just call it, I would just say he was very unfair.
Phil, I mean, the game's not played without you guys. Often overlooked, easy to criticize, but the game's not played without you guys. Who were the managers that knew that and that handled umpires with class, even when they were pissed or wanted to fire their team up or whatever?
Yeah, you know, the flip side of talking about Guillen is a guy like Bobby Cox. And Bobby Cox has been ejected more than anybody in the history of the game. So you would automatically think that umpires would say, oh, he was the worst, he was the most difficult. But he wasn't, because he got ejected, and he got ejected more than anybody, but he was fair. And once it was over, it was over. And the next day, it was over. And, you know, so, you know, guys like that. And you know, you just want a guy to be fair. You realize that everybody has their own job to do, and their job is to defend their players, and their job is sometimes to be ejected. You know, I remember having Buck Showalter when he was in Baltimore, and I missed a play at third, a steal play at third base. And he came out, and he was just, I think the player was Nick Markakis, who was a good guy. And he was probably the type of a guy that didn't argue very much or didn't question very much that I remember. And so Buck felt as though he had to come out to, you know, to defend him. And Buck says, I think you missed it, but what's going to happen is I'm going to stand and argue with you for a little while. Then I'm going to start jumping up and down, like acting like I'm really mad, and that's going to cause you to eject me. And then I'm going to jump up and down a little bit more, and then I'm going to go away. I said, okay. And that was, you know, so.
That's hilarious. Angry Jay here with us. He loves the old Braves manager, if you know what I mean. But how about Bruce Bochy? Any dealings with him?
Many, yeah. Bruce Bochy's going to be a Hall of Famer, no question about that. He, I have to say that, you know, he was a little more grumpy when he was younger, but, you know, as he got older, like all of us, we mellowed a little bit, but he was a fair guy. You know, he would argue, he would get mad, but he was fair, and he did it when he had to do it, but he was a decent guy.
I'm not going to ask you about every manager, obviously, but I got to throw one more out there. Lou Piniella.
Lou Piniella. You know, I had him in Seattle. I had him in Cincinnati. And, you know, actually, you know, I do a charity dinner, and I have a mystery guest every year. Lou did my dinner one year, and he was great. He was great. But he was, you know, I remember, it was when he was managing Cincinnati. And I was working, I was a call-up umpire, so I was up and down, still going back and up and down at AAA. And I was working with Bruce Fremming, and turns out that after Cincinnati, we were coming to New York, so I was flying home, and Piniella was on the same flight that I was. And the night before, Bruce had an ejection of Piniella arguing over his runner being out of the running lane. And any time that happens, I mean, it's kind of black and white. You know, he's inside the lane or he's not. And if he causes, you know, interference and he's out of the box, he's out. And runners return. But there's always an argument with that, and oftentimes leads to an ejection. And that happened that night. So Lou Piniella was sitting. And again, I was just up and down for, might have been my first year or second year up and down. And I we're getting off the plane, and I see him, and he thinks he recognizes me, and I introduce myself. I say, hey, Lou, I got to ask you about the play that happened last night. And I kind of explained it the way I just explained it to you guys. And I said, you know, I mean, to me, there was no question he was out. So what really did you see that made, you know, he said, oh, I don't know. I love Bruce Fremming. He said, I just had to get ejected. And it was, you know, so oftentimes it has nothing to do with,
that's awesome.
You know, yeah.
I got to ask you this, Phil. The for a player getting called up to the major leagues, it's got to be like a thrill of a lifetime. So when you got the call that you were going to get to ump your first major league game, what was that like, and where was the first game? Obviously, do you remember where it was?
My first game,
yeah, as a major league umpire.
Yeah, it was in St. Louis against the Dodgers, and it was June 4th, 1991. Just before that, I was in Rochester, New York. And, you know, the nice thing about the minor leagues, you as in the big leagues, but it was a little bit different in the minor leagues because you went to the cities more often because there were so fewer cities. And every time that I went to Rochester, I always went to this Italian restaurant called Rocky's with a guy who worked at the ballpark, an old-timer, old Italian guy who was like an usher. And I never not had lunch with him. And I just had lunch with him, and he was driving me back, and I got the call from Ed Vargo, who was in charge of the National League umpires at the time. And he told me that Randy Marsh twisted his ankle, and he's going to be out for a little while, and I was going to join Harry Wendelstadt's crew. So, and the first game, I had the first day I came into town, we had the day off. So, you know, the guys all went home, but I flew, you know, into the city. So I spent my first night on an off day by myself in a town. The guys told me where to go eat, and I did. And you know, the next day, my first assignment was working first base, and Joe Torre was the manager of the Cardinals, and I'll never forget it. It was that has to be, you know, getting that first call is certainly a thrill of your career.
So, Phil, it seems like you've had a lot of big thrills. You look at your bio, and, you know, you've done World Series games, multiple league championship series, All-Star games. You've also been on the crew for a couple of no-hitters. Like, is there one that's more nerve-wracking than the other?
You know, the postseason is a different animal altogether. The All-Star game is exciting to do, and it's an honor to do. But any post game is more, you know, there's more electricity in the air, there's more pressure, but it's nothing like working the World Series. You know, it's you look on the scoreboard and there's only one game lit up, and you know, I mean, that's what everybody is working towards, is to get to the World Series. Whether you're a player, a coach, manager, a trainer, you know, the groundskeepers, they want to get the World Series, you know, at their home field as well. So everybody who's on the field, front office too, I guess, we don't have much dealings with them, but everybody's trying to get to the World Series. And when you get there, you know, you think about, you know, as a kid, remember, like throwing a ball against the wall and saying, okay, 3-2, game 9 of the World Series. And, you know, you're always thinking of that. And then here you are. And then you're trying to talk yourself down, saying, okay, it's just a regular game. It's not a regular game. But, but that, you know, after the first couple pitches, it is almost like a regular game. That's the mindset that you have to have.
And I also read that you did the last All-Star game at Yankee Stadium in 2008, and then you did the very first game at the new Yankee Stadium in 2009. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes.
So what was the paradigm like between those two, like wrapping up the history at that stadium, then opening it up with the new stadium? Like, how was that to be a part of both of those scenarios?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, maybe more for me because I grew up, you know, going to Yankee Stadium. I was a Mets fan as well, but you know, I grew up a Yankees and a Mets fan. And, you know, to show my age, although you already mentioned the oldest umpire of all time, but I grew up, you know, Mickey Mantle, Roger Maris, and you know, those guys. And you know, just, you know, walking through the hallway to our locker room at the old Yankee Stadium, it was real narrow and a lot of bends and turns. And I remember the first time, like, walking through there saying, you know what? Like, Babe Ruth walked through these same halls. You know, cool. Lou Gehrig walked through these same halls, Joe DiMaggio. And it really, you know, I mean, again, it may have meant more to me because I grew up here. But, you know, that's what makes the game so great, really.
It is a great game. Phil, 2008 All-Star Game, Yankee Stadium. Is that the Josh Hamilton home run contest?
Yes.
Were you in attendance the day before for the home run contest?
No. I was at a restaurant downtown with my family.
Restaurant, yeah. Okay. I love a good restaurant. Phil, the Cole Hamels no-hitter, July 25, 2015. You ever have a contact with the catcher or pitcher from something historic like that afterward, like sign a lineup card? I don't know. Anything, or you just move on, business as usual?
Yeah, I mean, it's business as usual, you know, after that first night and then maybe like the next day. But the interesting thing about that no-hitter was I had the plate, and I didn't even know that he was pitching a no-hitter. And I had heard that there were trade rumors about Cole being traded to, I don't know if where he went after that, if it was, I don't know where he went, but I just heard that he was on the trade block. And after the last out, which if you really remember was like a circus catch out in left center field. And after that out was made, you know, game's over, and I'm, you know, we're walking off the field, and I see that Cole is mobbed by his teammates. And the first thing I thought of, you know, I said, I knew he was talking about being traded. Are they just so happy for him that he's going to a different team? And as I'm walking off, I happen to look up at the scoreboard, and I saw zeros. And I said, I didn't realize. I just worked a no-hitter.
That's awesome.
Hope you didn't blow a walk.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't know. I didn't know, and I'm glad I didn't know.
Because, Phil, have you ever worn a maroon blazer when working in National League game?
No, that was before my time, and it was that was just the American League guys wore that.
Oh, the big balloon.
The big chest protector?
Yeah, not in the big leagues. No. I did it at a, you know, when I first started out doing a freshman high school game, but yeah, when I went to umpire school, you could not wear the balloon. And the only guys that wore it were the guys that were grandfathered in to the American League.
Right. Phil, so you've had many postseason assignments. Do they assign an entire crew, or is the rating system such that, like, you work with new people once you get there?
Yeah, it's a completely new crew. You maybe just by chance that you may have a guy who you know you work with during the season on the same crew, but it's a altogether new crews.
Okay, I mean, all you guys are pretty probably proud of the work you do. So whether ego or preference, do you or other umpires, do you believe, have a preference of doing the plate or hanging around third base?
Well, you know, that's the good thing about the job is that, you know, every day is different, you know, so we rotate clockwise. So if I have the plate today, I'll be at third tomorrow and then, you know, go around the clock. But, you know, if you have a big, you know, if there's a big game, you want to have the plate. And, you know, there's some guys that just depending upon where they're starting in the rotation of a postseason game, they may not, you know, the series might be over before they get to that. So I think that any umpire who worked the World Series and didn't get the opportunity to work a plate, I feel confident to say that they're probably disappointed about that.
Yeah. Okay. Could I just give you a little word association? You don't have to talk loud or long about these people. I'm going to throw out some familiar names to the average baseball fan. And just a word or two. And if it's a negative word, maybe you can expand.
Okay.
This first one might be too old. I was going to say Don Denkinger. Probably. Did you work with him?
I did not. But, you know, when I was coming up and down, remember when I first came up and first broke in, I was working National League. And I've met Don, a real nice guy. You know, it's a shame for what he's remembered for. And if replay was implemented in his day, you'd never even remember his name, I'm sure.
Yeah, Todd Worrell does. How about Richie Garcia?
Great guy. Know Richie very well. I've worked spring training games with him years ago. He became a supervisor, and he was like a mentor. Just a great guy. If you have a question, he's the type of a guy that you say, "Hey, Richie, you know, I had a steal play at last night, and I missed it. I just didn't see it." He'd say, "Send me the tape," and or he would look it up or send him the tape, and then he'd say, "Okay, you were too close to the play." You know, I mean, he was good like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some guys that are good, like as a mentor, but they can't really tell you why they take a play where they do. But Richie was good with positioning, and he was able to. He helps any umpire who asks him.
As a diehard Yankee fan, I just want to say he got that call right in '96 with Derek Jeter.
Gone.
Hell of a job by him.
Gone. Hunter Wendelstedt.
Hunter Wendelstedt, good guy. We came up together. I never worked a full season with Hunter. I'm sure I worked a postseason game with him, but you know, came from good stock. His father did it, and you know, he was good with the rules, and he was a good union guy.
Was that the umpire school you went to? His dad's, or no?
Yes.
The Harry. Yes. Yeah, I just remember seeing as a kid in the back of the Sporting News they used to have the Harry Wendelstedt umpiring camp. I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Phil, C.B. Buckner.
C.B. Buckner, great guy, gets a bad rap, you know, got a lightning rod to the media, but really is a good guy and a good partner.
Joyce.
Jimmy Joyce, you're picking all the guys that have had hard luck on the field. We all have had it at one time or another.
It's a podcast, Phil. We got to go there.
Jimmy Joyce, another guy that you would never mention his name if there was replay at that time.
And Laz Diaz.
Laz, I've worked a couple games with him here and there, but never spent the full season with a guy. You know, you never really know a guy unless you work a full season with him, you know. And, you know, it's the same thing like whether a guy has a good reputation or a bad reputation, and it seems as though either people just kind of perpetuate it maybe without even really – and I'm not talking about the fans. You know, I'm talking about us as, you know, other umpires. You know, like you know, somebody may say, this guy is a great umpire. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and then the next guy says, well, yeah, I never worked with him. I heard he's a great umpire. Yeah, he's a great umpire. But unless you work with the guy every day and see him, how he performs and how he prepares every single day, you're really not qualified to, you know, to make a judgment on a guy.
I
can tell you that, you know, you mentioned guys that have had rough plays. I am in that category as well. Every guy misses a play that he wished that he didn't. But you know, it's just that's just the nature of the beast.
All right, I'm going to cut down my list then because you did you ever work a full season with Angel?
Not in the big leagues. I worked a couple seasons with him in the minor leagues, in the Southern League. And Angel is a great guy. He would give you the shirt off his back. Again, lightning rod to the media. You know, that's all I can say about it. I know him as a person. I know him as an umpire. He had some hard luck. I don't know how he did it night after night sometimes, but, you know, he really is a stand-up guy if you knew him.
You work with Brian Onora?
I worked a lot of games with Brian Onora, yes.
He couldn't have played baseball, is all I'm saying. Just an observation, I'm just saying. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he played or not. I don't know.
Phil, fans are stupid sometimes. I actually hate when these fans are heckling players, and especially umpires. Like, have you ever heard one that's actually so good or original that you got to just laugh about it?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, I remember in the minor leagues, it was in Memphis, and there were these two brothers, and they would never get on us, but they got on every player of the opposing team. And the one guy would say a line and the other guy would repeat it, or he would be, you know, so their big line, and I remember, and how many years ago was that, but I remember to this day where somebody would come up with the opposing team and they would say, "Hey, Smith, you couldn't hit water if you fell out of a boat. And his brother would say, yeah, if you fell out of a boat. And they would do that all game long, you know.
That's pretty good. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, I don't know if you know, but you got nominated in 2019 for one of the ejections of the year when you ran Brett Gardner for the bat tapping in the dugout. I guess he was maybe picking on a minor league umpire, so you stepped up and kind of said enough is enough and got him out of here. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that I was nominated for ejection of the year, but I do remember the incident for sure. Yeah, and he had done it before. I think that was about his third time that he may have done it. I saw it on TV, and I think the first time may have been in Toronto. And you know, the funny thing about it was that people, like, forget fans, but even like people in the media said, well, gee whiz, you know, he got ejected for banging the bat. I don't think there's anything in the rule book about, you know, that you can't bang the bat in the top of the dugout or cause us to be ejected. And I'm saying, like, they, you know, they don't get it, you know, they just don't get it. Like, it doesn't say in the rule book that if you throw a tomato at an umpire on the field that you're going to get ejected either. But you know that if you do that, you're going to get ejected. But you know, and they also said, you know, he's just showing his feelings. If he did it after his teammate hit a home run, or if an infielder or an outfielder made a diving catch to say, or leap at the wall to save a home run, no problem. But he only did it when he was, you know, disagreed with an umpire's call, whether it was a strike or a play. And I said, you know what, it can't go on, because the kids in Williamsport will be doing it next.
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
I'm a Yankee fan. I love Brett Gardner, but he had to go that day. He was showing somebody up. Didn't matter who it was. He got to go.
Yeah.
I think he ran CeCe out that day, too.
I love CeCe. That day?
Did you run CeCe Sabathia out the same day? Was that the same day?
Yes.
That's a good memory, Don Father. How about this? I want to ask you about the new rules. Like, I'm old school.
Jay, I got to do one more.
All right, go ahead.
Fact or fiction? Were you part of a brawl where eight players were ejected, and it happened to be the one where Pedro Martinez hit Gerald Williams on the hand, and Gerald went out to the mound to see what was going on? Were you on that game?
That was my birthday on August 29th, back in, I forget the year, you may have the year, but I think there were more than eight got ejected that day. I don't remember, but the first one was Pedro hitting Gerald, yes. And then it went crazy from there.
Is it true that Pedro was whining like a little person, I was going to say, at the bottom of the pile, saying, get off me. Was that true? I heard that.
These are Yankee fans, Phil. These are Yankee fans, just so you know.
I can't confirm or deny that, no.
Thank you.
Sorry, Angry Jay, go ahead.
Phil, I want to ask about the new rules. Like, you've been doing this for a long time. When they first came into play, I'm old school. I don't like any of them. I hate the throw over thing. The pitch clock is, to me, it's okay now. I mean, I'll admit I did hate it. I hate the new bases. What are your thoughts on all? And I really dislike the ghost runner on second.
Terrible.
Do you care about any of the rules, about the new things? And I got to ask about the strike thing coming in next year. Like, I mean, I know you can only say so much, but
hate it.
Do you like any of it? Or you just go along with it all?
I like the clock.
Well, you know, there's been so many changes since I started, and when you first hear about it, like, even, you know, replay. You know, remember, yep. Replay just first came out with boundary calls.
Yeah, it was just supposed to be home
run,
right?
Well, yeah, just home runs, and that really was helpful, because especially a lot of these new stadiums, the fans are so close. And sometimes you can't get a look whether the fan touched the ball. Like, you know, was it a home run? Did he touch it? And so that turned out to be helpful. And we were skeptical. I was at first, you know, because I consider myself a purist of the game.
Me too.
So I said, you know, that's not. But then that turned out to be okay. And then you say, well, okay, where is it going to go from here? And we see where it has gone. And I described replay as helpful, like a medication can be helpful, but there's a side effect to every medication, right?
That's pretty good.
So the side effect to replay is the guy who hits a double and he's safe by 2-3 feet to the point, from my point of view, I'm making a very casual safe call. And then all of a sudden they're holding you up, and then you see the manager, cupping his ears to take a look at it. And then as soon as that happens, and I've been at both ends of that, on the field as well as on the headset in the replay room, and as soon as that happens, you say, he had to bounce off the bag, in the air, while the runner held the glove on him for a split second. And you look at the replay and you say, okay, I can't be mad about missing that one because it was so, you can't see that in real time. And in the replay room, you say, I see it, in super slow motion and I have to overturn it, but it hurts me to do it, So that, as far as replay goes, that's that. As far as you mentioned the larger base, yeah. At first, we said, oh, it does look like a pizza box. But after a while, we don't even notice that now. And I'm sure even the fan doesn't even notice it anymore.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah.
As far as the pitch clock goes, I said, oh, this is going to be bad. I mean, the beauty of our game was that we never had a clock. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, and anything that comes new, there's always growing pains, and there's just, everyone adjusts, and everyone does. And then what I realized about it was, after you kind of got used to it, because in the very beginning, you're looking at the clock, and then you're saying, oh, here comes the pitch. But then, and then we have these backpacks that we're wearing now, and earpieces.
Yeah.
And, if the clock goes to zero, it'll buzz. But when I realized it, and after we got used to it, where the newness was gone, and it took a half hour off game times, then I said, this is like going back to the 60s when a pitcher just got the ball. You look at the old clips. Pitcher got the ball, took a sign, and threw. And that's what they're doing now. They have to do that now. So, So in that sense, after we adjusted to it, I think it was great to cut a half hour off the game time.
Yeah, now you could get two beers and a pizza and be home by 2 o'clock.
How about just real
or
quick.
Or even 1:30. Yeah.
How about real quick, just like next year, the challenge with the strike, is that going to be kind of like the same thing you think? It's going to be hard for a home plate umpire if the guy can just step out of the batter's box and tap his head. And...
Yeah, that's going to be
any thoughts on that?
We experimented with it in spring training last year.
Yeah.
And it was very different. It was probably the biggest change of any that I've gone through in my career. And pitcher, catcher, hitter, the only three that can challenge it, and it has to be done right now. And I don't have a crystal ball, but you guys see it if you watch games where the catcher is trying to frame every pitch to look like a strike, right?
Yep.
And I can show you video where the pitch comes in at the knee, just off or just on the corner, and he's pulling the pitch to center high.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah. Harry
so I think that you're going to see the opposite with this. I think he's going to take that borderline pitch and slap it to the ground to try to make it look like a ball. And that's just my feeling. That doesn't make me right. Time will tell. But I think that there's gamesmanship in everything, right?
Yep.
So the catcher's job is, I think, going to try to make like a borderline strike look like a ball so that the hitter may challenge it. But I think that the big adjustment is going to be they're going to be much more selective about when they challenge. They're only going to get two, from what I understand.
Yep.
So, leadoff hitter, and I think there's going to be guys on, that their manager is going to say, you cannot challenge, you know. And yeah. And I think they're going to have to be selective. You know, you're going to have to save it until, you know, you have tying run on second in the eighth inning, as opposed to, you know, an 0-2 pitch in the bottom of the first. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting. I fear that perhaps there's going to be more walks because, again, the hitters are that good. They're going to adjust to it. And they're not going to, you know, what was the first thing you learned in Little League? Well, if the pitch is close, foul it off. If you don't think you can hit it, foul it off.
Yep.
They're not going to have to foul off the close pitch anymore because they're going to know it's going to be a ball. And, you know, again, everyone may not have that kind of an eye, but a lot of them do.
Great,
you know, and they're good. These guys
great
are
answer.
Good. So, and what that will lead to, I believe, is longer game times.
Man, that's insightful. That's awesome. Well, your answer was awesome. Phil, going way back to probably when you first broke in, when the neighborhood play is tough now on middle infielders, seeing that they could go to New York and prove that maybe the second baseman or shortstop isn't actually on the base when they catch the ball. It kind of, like you when you said before, the side effects, you also can't go out of your way to crush a middle infielder anymore. Were you in the game when the Hal McCrae's of the world could still... No, no way, Hal McCrae. Who was the meanest guy going in the second to break it up? Albert Bell, somebody like that? Like, who was the meanest guy that a shortstop or second baseman didn't want to see coming?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen clips of both of the guys that you mentioned, you know. We saw the devastating one with Chase Utley, who was a great guy.
Oh yeah,
and you know that's just the way the game was played, and it was a good move that they made by not allowing that to happen.
Yeah.
So
and you could still still break it up. You just got to slide into the base, right?
Yeah, you can slide hard, you know, but you can't, you know, you can't slide late. You can't do what Chase Utley did. You have to slide to the base. You can't, you know, slide past the base. You can't slide so far to the side of the base that you can't reach the base. And you have to be able to hold the base. So, those are good changes.
You've been awesome, Phil. Thanks for coming on. Just a couple last questions. Like, you said you're a purist. You said you love baseball. Before you realized you didn't know it all, you thought you knew it all. So you're a baseball guy. Like, but you have a job to do. Maybe on the bases or on an off day or when you're in New York and you've seen these guys up close, who are the pitchers in your career that, like, didn't pitch, like, no-hitters, like, in one, two-hitters? Who are the guys you knew were out there and, like, they were just really tough to beat and they were coming after you?
Yeah, you know, I would say Clemens for sure. You know, I would say... Roy Halladay. I mean, he would, you know, and I always worked spring training in the Clearwater area, so I had the Phillies a lot, and Phillies had Blue Jays as well. They're in the same neighborhood. So when he was with Toronto and the Phillies, same thing. I saw him a lot. He actually got mad if he gave up a hit in spring training. that's really how much of a competitor he was, and. You know, I mean, it was just all about preparation and he was a competitor.
Names. Those are two great names. How about hitters? Who have you seen step in there and be like, this pitcher has no shot here?
I would say going back to when I started, I would say, what's his name from... From San Diego.
Tony Gwynn?
Tony.
Who was it?
Tony Gwynn?
Tony Gwynn, absolutely, yeah. He was just a pure hitter, and like he just kind of did magic with the bat, it looked like. And, yeah, that was the first, he was the first person that I saw, like, up close as a hitter and said, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. This guy's going to be okay when he gets older.
Yeah. Certainly was. That was tremendous, Phil.
I want to ask you one last one, Phil. Odd rules. I remember as a kid watching a game in, was it at Old Tiger Stadium? And I forgot who the Tigers were playing, but Sparky Anderson was on top of the rules, and there was a ball in the dirt. The catcher blocked it, and it rolled in front of him, and the catcher used his mask just to pull the ball back to him.
Yeah.
And he just picked it up and threw it back to the mound, and Sparky Anderson came out, and he was just talking to the umpires, and the umpires got together. And I believe there was a guy at first. Is it two bases, or was it three back then? Because it was using a piece of equipment.
One base for a pitched ball.
Yeah.
Two for a thrown ball, and assuming you throw your glove at the ball,
three base rule, right?
Yeah.
And three if it's a batted ball.
Yeah. Well, he just used his mask to pull it back to him so he could throw it back to the pitcher. And that's right. It was three bases, I believe. The guys from first scored. And I just thought it was so bizarre. Yeah.
I think it's if you take your equipment off to do it or something like that. Yeah.
Well, he took his mask off, so I guess he did take it off.
Phil, if the ball gets stuck in your equipment, what's the rule there?
Yeah, if it gets stuck, it would be one base on a pitch ball.
In your equipment, the umpire?
Yes.
You got to get out of the way.
Yes.
Both ways, Phil.
Come on, man. Phil, we're called the Bristle Boys. We'll be sending you this. You are fantastic. Our second umpire we've had on. If any of your other boys want to come on, we're down to talk baseball.
I can do this all night.
I really appreciate it.
Phil, it's Jeff. I'll get you the recording of this in a day or two. I'll shoot it over to you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Sounds good. It was fun, guys. It was a lot of fun.
You're
Phil,
the best.
How about Phil Cousy?
Yeah, you're the best. Thanks, Phil.
Heck of a job, Phil. Thank you, man. Both ways.
All right.
Clank, clank, clank. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Part two of our December 10th episode. We have a visitor in the studio, and it is none other than, let's see if you guys could guess this one. Connecticut state champion baseball coach, three times within 10 years, maybe within 8 years or 9 years.
Catholic school?
It is a Catholic school.
It's got to be Vic. It's got to be Vic.
Rinaldi, everybody. Welcome, Vic Rinaldi. He's actually in the studio. Welcome, Vic.
Thanks for having us. Or me.
Did you bring somebody?
No, I didn't. Thanks for having me. I'm sorry. Thanks for having me.
Say it up to my little friend.
Is Denny here or something?
This guy's an asshole. Get used to it.
All right, we got a baseball guy in the studio. We've already had Phil Cousy on. Let's do a real quick who'd you rather. Yankees, Sox, Mets. And I guess just whatever team you might root for. I couldn't imagine it's a different team than that living around here. But who would you rather? Real quick, Kyle Tucker, Cody Bellinger, go.
Tucker.
Wow. I don't want either one. Okay. But
who would you want?
Who would you rather?
Who would you rather?
I don't want either one. You got to pick one.
Can't say Dominguez?
So who would you rather out of two guys?
There's one guy I would take.
Hold on.
It's your segment.
Tucker or Bellinger? And you guys all want Tucker, and I'm going Bellinger.
What about Tatis? In a trade.
Another right-hander. He'd bring a little energy that we might lack. That'd be electric. We need some electricity in a ballpark. I just want to play Dominguez. All right, how about Scooble or Skeens? That was a good one, Coach.
I'm going Skeens. If I jumped, I'd say
tough
Skeens.
One.
Skeens only because he's younger.
Not by a landslide, though.
Skeens because of who he's going to bring with him.
And his girlfriend? Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Coach.
Guys, get your heads out of the gutter. How about Scooble in a cavernous left field, though? I mean, he's a lefty. They're going to stack righties, No?
Are you asking us to confirm the answers we just gave you? Is that what you're asking us? Are you sure you want Skeens? I mean,
forget it. Pick a Japanese player.
Speaking of Scooble, I know we talked a little bit off the mic about the Mets and the Dodgers. Dodgers picking up Diaz today. Some trade rumors I saw this afternoon was the Dodgers are involved with Scooble talk.
Shocking. The Dodgers are involved with a Scooble.
They need to shut it down.
Yeah. So that would be
depressing.
That'd be fun.
There should be a rule that they have to trade Shohei or Glasnow.
can't really blame the Dodgers, though, because the Dodgers are what the Yankees used to be.
You play the roles they give you. It's just annoying as a non-Dodgers fan.
So Magic Johnson and his group are the new George Steinbrenners. They want to win.
Yes.
Sad. Pick a Japanese player. I don't even care if you can pronounce a name. Do you want the pitcher, the first baseman, or the third baseman? Go.
Pitcher.
I'll take Murakami, the hitter.
That's Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
He's the third baseman?
Yeah.
I think he strikes out a lot. I don't know if the Yankees need
that.
Fair right in. Yeah, we don't need that. We don't need that. Learn from the Blue Jays. I want the pitcher.
Okay.
Never have enough pitching.
We got a lot of it.
Yeah, but what are you going to do with McMahon at third?
That's what I'm saying.
Roll strikes out. To hit 188. 8 bombs. All right. How about this one? I think this is a fair one. I think you're all going to jump on the lefty quick, but as far as age, I think this is a good one. Alonso or Schwarber?
Well, Schwarber already signed, so he just signed.
He did?
Signed today.
Signed today. Phillies. Five years.
It would have been him, though.
5 years, 150, or 5 years, 160.
Good move by the Sox, letting him go.
Well, the Sox would probably get Alonso.
Jesus Christ. All right, how about Bregman or Bichette, left side guys?
Bichette.
I hate them both. I don't want
to. You got to pick one. You made me pick one.
I hate both of them.
You made me pick one.
Whoever's a shorter contract, so we can get out of it. Bregman, because he plays third base.
All right.
And so Bichette's, he'll be in 250 in a couple of years, or waddling around as a DH.
So Jay wants Bregman, just everybody. Jay wants Bregman. So, a couple baseball things just because of our great guest tonight, Coach Vic Rinaldi, umpire Phil Cuzzy. I'm going to give a quick preview into, not say what, but just a few baseball quotes about umpires in, you know, respect to one of our guests. What legendary player and manager for New York Yankees said, "Ump, he was safe. Even my watch saw it, and it's not working." Famous quote guy.
Yogi.
Absolutely.
Yogi.
How about this Orioles manager said, he was arguing with an umpire, and the umpire said, "Here, look at my rule book." And Earl said, "I don't read Braille."
I'm going to guess Earl Weaver?
You're a Weaver.
I said it before you even started the question.
Jesus
Christ.
That was
the best one.
Earl, the moment.
I'm going to go Weaver.
Terrible move, my man. This one I'm not saying. I'm not even going to say what his nickname was at third base. But this pirate, well, among other teams, this pirate said, "If that was a strike, I'm the Queen of England." And I didn't get the memo.
Chuck Tanner.
Third base, Pirates.
Bill Mallock.
Mad Dog.
You know, Bill Mallock.
Bill Mallock, you got it. Okay, we are flying. And now we're going to get into Coach Vic Rinaldi. 3-time state champion. Coach, a little bit of history here. You and I used to go at it back in your Berkshire League days.
That's right.
The head coach of Lewis Mills.
What do you mean, go at it?
Well, his team would cheat and mine would play by the rules and we would see who would not.
Hey, before we get this thing started, he used to tear you up. Like he said nothing good about you, by the way.
That is not true at all. I've given him props on the show before.
I'm used to it. That's fine. Yeah, no, we started back in, 2006. You were already there for a couple of years. At Thomaston, and then 2006 was my first year at Mills.
Wisconsin, I wasn't the head coach yet.
You weren't. That's right. That's Wisconsin was the head coach my first year, and then you, I think, took over when in
08,
and then won a state title yourself in 2009.
All by myself.
All by yourself. All by yourself. That's right. All by yourself in 09, and and then I stopped coaching in 2012. Didn't think I was gonna go back to coaching, but opportunity presented itself and it's worked out pretty well.
And what an opportunity it was.
Yeah, it was nice. St. Paul treated me great. So it's been a fun 9-10 years. I don't even know how long I've been there now.
Well, you got 3 shifts, so.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of talent. A lot of talent. We still have a lot of talent coming back, so.
Coach, I think, not to put heat on you, I think not this coming spring, which I'm not looking past the season in any way. I think you'll be phenomenal and you'll make a run. I think that following year, your pitchers are going to be almost unbeatable.
Well, Degato will be back. Kobe's already committed to East Carolina. after his sophomore season. Unfortunately, had an injury this summer, had to have Tommy John, but he'll be in the lineup, he'll hit, and he'll work his way back. I know he's going to work hard. But yeah, having him back.
We'll have two juniors backing him up, at least that I know of. He probably have more.
Evan Judenis, he was a freshman last year, a sophomore this year. And we have a lot of young arms coming up, so it's going to be exciting.
Coach, I'm not going to do the old...
Sean Kim told us a story that nearly made him celebrate.
Go ahead.
You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do the old, well, your job's easy because you get kids from many towns things. But do you even have to bother looking for them, or do they just find their way to St. Paul? Are you kidding me?
I think we get a lot of guys from Southington area. I don't know if it's because we have a small school atmosphere, smaller classroom, but we do get a lot of guys from Southington. Not many Bristol guys. We get a couple Bristol guys, but we do get players from Southington and other towns.
Let me rephrase the question: are you out there looking for these guys, or they just come the same place?
No. Everyone thinks that we're out there recruiting. I live in Thompson. I have a 15-year-old boy who's soon to be 16, plays, two, three sports himself. I have a daughter who plays two or three sports. So, no, we're not out looking for players. One, I don't have the time. And two, that's not what we do.
But some coaches do. It's within the rules, right?
I mean, baseball really is that sport, but a little bit. There's a school in Waterbury that might do that.
Yeah,
what I was looking for. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, there are some rumors out there, but yeah, we are not looking for players actively. I think the school does a good job academically, and having the talent that we've had and players that we had come in, it does help with newer players coming in from those towns that have watched them from the same town play Little League, and now they're over at St. Paul, so it does help getting those players in. But yeah,
I mean you got Division I pitchers, Division III players up and down, and you have two that are under minor league contracts as of like right now.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean the program is pretty much recruiting for itself.
Yeah. I think the program's doing pretty well for itself. Daniel's drafted by the Twins. But we do have another talented class that's in this year, as they're a freshman class, so we want to keep it going. A lot of credit goes to the coaches. We have a really good freshman coach in Mike Church that does a great job with the freshmen.
He's your freshman coach?
Mike Church is our freshman coach. Yeah. Last year was his first year. He does a great job with them. My assistant, Jarrett Stowers, he was there before me. He's the reason why I ended up at St. Paul. He's been the pitching coach there since 2009, I believe. So Jarrett does a great job with the pitchers. Bob Hansen is another assistant, and our JV coach, Jared Zima, does an awesome job. So I think our coaching...
He can
fix a glove, but I think they do a good job developing these guys. And of course, our players do a good job of playing in the off season and working out, all year round, which is good and also bad in itself. I think another thing we could talk about is I like to talk about is some of these arm injuries these kids are having, because when you and I played, I didn't know anyone that had arm issues or had
Tommy John.
Tommy
John's the only one.
Right, Tommy John's the only one. And everyone, thinks it's, pitchers throwing too many pitches and the pitch count thing. And I just think these guys are training year round and not giving their arms enough rest. A lot of it goes, when they're done playing high school ball, they're off to a showcase in, Virginia or North Carolina or Florida playing in these showcases and not taking a break. And then playing all summer long, fall showcases, and then maybe they take the month of December off, and then they're back out and back in their throne, in January, February, and March, getting ready for their high school seasons. I saw a video, I don't know what facility, but it was like 2 weeks ago, right around Thanksgiving. They had kids crow hopping into a net with a radar gun. Like, what are we doing?
Well, is it the problem? This pure velocity is all they're trying to get.
Right.
Because they know if they hit a magic number,
right.
They can't maybe hit the strike zone, but if I throw 90 at 15,
it's all about spin right now, man. Spin.
But I talked to Coach Hunt about this. I play for his 40 and over team in the summer, and we talked about, the arm injuries, and he said the same thing. These kids just don't, You know, they're not taking enough time off in between seasons. They're just training year round, and that's why these guys are getting hurt. You see, yeah, so
it's
many
not
more
the kids' fault, though.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, you know, my son plays soccer here in Bristol for, you know, Leszek's place. Leszek Rona plays for Ajax, and it's, you know, year round. You know, it's a year round commitment. You know, so it's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault. I'm part of the problem.
It's not just the parents. It's all adults.
All adults. Yeah.
You know, what should be encouraged is playing as many sports as possible all the time. You know, or play in season sports.
Right.
And have it be a priority. There's nothing worse than a high school kid in the winter who tells their basketball or wrestling coach or indoor track coach that they won't be here one weekend because I'm going to a showcase.
Right.
Oh, you are? And then for what?
Right.
To post it on Instagram so that you can then quit?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Jesus.
We had that problem. Like, my wife and I we ran into that issue this weekend. You know, Thomaston basketball had practice Sunday morning, and our son had a quote-unquote college showcase soccer tournament in December in Middletown. He had two games Saturday and then a game Sunday morning. He didn't go to his game Sunday morning. He went to basketball practice. You know, he's in season. We had a conversation with him, and he's going to have the conversation with his soccer coach and tell him that, you know, I'm playing basketball. It's basketball season, and I'll be at practice and indoor games when I can.
We always got to get a Thomas and basketball reference in here. Yeah, somehow, you know. It always makes it into the podcast.
A life.
That conversation won't go easy with the soccer premier.
It won't. And,
but
you
that's
know,
what I'm
won't.
Saying.
It won't.
Adults mess it up, I man. Leave the kids alone, man.
Wholeheartedly. I've seen it 1,000 times, and they'll tell you I'm a fan of multi-sport athletes, and when it comes to your kid leaving their program to attend that other sport, it's an issue.
Yeah.
It always is, and it's too bad.
And I'm going to you know, I'm a realistic. We talk about parents all the time, like sometimes having unrealistic goals for their kids. I'm realistic as it comes. My son is going to – if he's going to go to college, he's going to get an education. If he's lucky enough to play a little soccer, maybe at a D3 school, great. But he's not going, you know, Division I. Definitely not going to be a Division I basketball player. So, you know, we're just going to try to get him through high school. And if he's lucky enough to play some soccer in college, great. If he doesn't, he gets college education, gets a good job. You know, that's what we're looking for.
Well, the 4-year high school window isn't good enough for people anymore, and I don't understand it. Like, it's all about the, you know, the bragging rights for what your kid's doing in the Instagram posts, and I guess Facebook too.
Yeah.
Very few of them are talented enough to go Division I, like the Don Father's daughter, golfer at LeMoyne. But no, legit, she's doing that. Like, that's not for everybody. It comes with a talent, number one, support system, and then
a whip.
Just a little realism. No,
yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, realism. No, that's a good word. Yeah, realism. Yeah. Just... but yeah, a lot of those commitments that you read about is, I think, a lot about the social media posts of the parents, just putting it out there to make sure everyone knows that their son or daughter committed to a certain school or, you know.
I love the testimony how hard Susie worked for this. You know, she's realizing her dream. Coach Rinaldi, we had Major League umpire Phil Cozzi on tonight. How would you rate yourself in terms of dealing with game officials? And I know it's tough in baseball. I mean, one pitch could, you know, be the game.
So Phil brought up, I think it was Bruce Bochy. He said he was a little rougher when he was younger around the edges. And then as he got older, kind of developed a little bit, you know, better relationship with the officials. When I first started coaching, my one and only ejection was against Thomaston in 2006, my first year. And I was, you know, 25, 26 years old at the time, a little, you know, a lot younger. You know, so obviously over time, you kind of learn that, you know, arguing calls, it's not going to change the call. You kind of have to pick your spots. And, you know, I don't necessarily go out there and yell at umpires maybe like I used to, and go out there and have more of a conversation, maybe buy a call later down the road. But I think I have a pretty good relationship. I was pretty happy this year. Not only did we win a state championship, but also from the Hartford board, we were awarded the sportsmanship award for.
Oh, that never happens.
Yeah. So
the winners never.
We were awarded the sportsmanship award. So you know, we were really proud of that. And a lot of credit for that goes to Cal Chance. So if anyone is listening and knows about our team. Cal Chance was our four-year starter. He was our catcher three out of his 4 years. His first year as a freshman started at third base for us for the 22 state championship team. But he set the standard for us and set the tone early on. Would always introduce himself to the home plate umpire with a handshake. How you doing? Good afternoon, Blue. My name is Cal Chance. I'm going to be protecting you today. Every game. And the umpires after the game would be like, that kid's awesome. You know, he's the best catcher I've ever had. You know, I've ever called a game with. Not only the way he plays, but his personality. Great kid. Just a great kid. And, you know, sorry to see him go. Like, obviously, he graduated this year, but love Cal.
I remember when you didn't recruit him down at
Shrub Rotor. We don't recruit.
No, honestly, I mean, he was going there. I get it. What a great kid, and I heard he's doing well.
Doing really well. I actually texted him when UConn played him early in the year for basketball, and I think the score was, it was 43-3 in the first quarter. And I texted him. I said, Cal, they might, UMass may need you on the basketball court just as much as they need you on the baseball field. And he was like, man. He's like, they were pretty bad that night. But yeah, it was like 43-3, and I texted him. But he's doing great.
I heard he did pretty well in the weight room, too.
Yeah, no one's going to outwork him. No one's going to outwork Cal on the field or in the weight room. Yeah. Yeah, they got a special player at UMass Lowell.
Coach, I give you some credit with, the job of a high school baseball coach, especially at a school your size. The catcher before him, I think, went to New Haven.
Casey Cerruto.
Okay.
Just interned with me in my office. Yeah.
And that year, or two of those years, one of those years, another one of the better catchers in Connecticut, you had a need at first and on the mound, and you ended up
Owen Davis
figuring out where to. So my point is, coach took a catcher, put him at first base, he ended up being one of his top two pitchers.
We had that year we were like 1A and 1, we had 1 and 1A.
And I think you lost in the finals that year.
In the finals, yeah.
So you took a team to the finals, you put a catcher at first and pitched them. And this is what Class S coaches do. And again, going back to adults ruining stuff for parents, for kids, they're travel coaches, maybe they're, I don't know who. But like, you come in and say, oh, I play, left field. Well, no, you don't. You play where we tell you you're going to play.
Right. That happens every year.
Oh, I play short.
Everyone's a shortstop.
You play center right now because that's where I wrote you in Atlanta.
Right. Everyone's a shortstop. Everyone bats third for their summer teams because, mommy and daddy are cutting a check.
5 million of them.
Well, you have a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old coming to play for varsity, and we do play some of our younger guys, but we plug them into the lineup where they fit our needs. So when your 15-year-old, say, sophomore is coming up, maybe he's playing shortstop for his 15U team when he's playing against other 15U teams, but when he's coming up to varsity and he's playing as a sophomore, he's not going to be a shortstop. Again, that rings true. There seems to be like an AAU or travel team on every street corner now. So that happens a lot, too. So I know, I kind of have an idea what type of player I'm getting if just trying to get an understanding of how many travel teams that player's played for in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
I had someone a couple years ago, and he played for four different travel teams in four different summers because, the coaches didn't like him. Well, I don't think it was the coaches. It wasn't anything personal. They just, you didn't like where they were playing. You were batting you in the lineup, so you're going to go out and find another team. So we kind of knew what type of player was coming into the program. So,
Coach, wish you continued success. Am I a big supporter of the St. Paul Falcons.
We appreciate it. Hoping Sean comes out for the team this year. He'd be a great addition to the team.
It hits bombs.
Yeah, listen, I've been trying to get him to play the last 2 years.
Hits like Jesus. Feels like Judas. Throws like Mary. I didn't say that. That was a compliment. I know a kid named Mary that's got a hell of an arm. Okay. Coach, you're going to join us with these next few segments, but we're turning it over to the Don Father. Don Father. Where are we going next?
We got some great football. We got some great basketball. But I want to start with I think everybody in front of them has a sheet, or at least somebody has a sheet. We're going to start with it. We're going to start with a grid right now. It's a little grid challenge. You're going to eliminate a player on this list. We'll go around the table. This is okay. Career fantasy points for wide receivers. It's PPR format. No, it's not every receiver ever. So for those thousands listening, we're going to run through them. Calvin Johnson, Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Chad Johnson, Wes Welker, Julio Jones, D-Hop, Davante Adams, Mike Evans, Brandon Marshall. The question is, who has the most career fantasy points? So what I want to do is knock one off. So I'm going to start with Angry, since he's next to me. Eliminate one person off the list that you're confident. You're going to say, there's no way this person has the most fantasy points on this list. By the way, I was wrong when I looked at these. I did not guess the person who had the most.
Chad Johnson.
Okay, that is correct. Chad Johnson on this list is actually second lowest in career fantasy points. So we're going to Vic.
Football guy, coach?
Brandon Marshall.
He is, you're correct. He is eliminated. He was third on the list in points, but you're still correct.
All right.
These guys.
Kevin Crocker, you guys want to combine? You want to go separate? What do you want to do?
I'm my own man.
Okay.
no idea. Welker.
He was the low man on the list, Kev, so that was the best guess. Low man on the list. Wes Welker is eliminated. Crocker?
I'm going D-Hop.
D-Hop is second on the list, wow. So you are living dangerously, my friend, but
D-Hop I had to help you guys out.
Does get eliminated, so after round one, we got one more. Mac?
Took my guy, actually.
He took mine.
You just got to go with the length of the career. Julio?
He was the one I picked. He was fourth on the list in points. So, we've gone around the horn once, and there's only one, two, three, four, five left. So are we going to make it around? I doubt it. We got Calvin Johnson. Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Devontae, and Mike Evans. So Angry, say Calvin Johnson. You are correct. He was actually second to last on the list because of longevity of career, right? I mean,
correct. Is this as of this, like this week?
As of now. As of this morning,
crushing it.
I have a pretty good idea who number one is, but I'm not going to say. You want me to give you my guy now?
Yeah.
Mike Evans.
That's right. You're eliminating?
Yeah.
Correct. And he is number three on the list all time.
A lot of thousands.
You got number two and three and four, I think, Victor, Coach, right? So we got left Keenan Allen, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams. Who is the all-time leader in fantasy points?
Who is or is not?
You want to guess who's not, as your guess.
Change the rules, huh?
I'll go with Tyreek Hill.
That is correct.
We're squeaking through.
So there's only two left.
Is he fifth? What is it?
Tyreek Hill was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th.
Okay.
There's only two left, so Mac is it.
I'm going to go
Davante Adams.
You are incorrect.
Yeah. I have him this year.
When this list came out 4 weeks ago,
he wasn't top.
D-Hop was number one.
Yeah. Adams has
Devontae was number two.
Where's Keenan on the list?
Couldn't have been more.
Keenan's 2505. So he's seventh out of 10. But they're all in the ballpark. Wes Welker was a little lower behind than Chad Johnson. Everybody else is pretty close.
I mean, you take those two stints that Keenan had out. I mean, he's had a dynamite career. These are
Devontae is 100
BYU just hit a
over D-Hop. So Devontae, by the way, to put it in perspective, has 2,900 points, fantasy points in his career. How many do you think Jerry Rice had?
Jerry Rice played for a while.
How many points did he have?
2,900, Devontae. Out of these guys, he's the leader.
$4,000.
No, I'm gonna say lower. I'm gonna say 2,200.
5,600.
Wow. That was a trick question.
Jerry Rice had 2,500 more points than anybody else on this list. Moss had 3,600.
How about this? Where did Devontae Adams go to school?
Wherever David Carr went, Fresno State.
Correct. There you go.
Good guess. Good guess.
Not a guess. How did somebody guess Fresno State? you wouldn't even guess they have football.
Hey, not who would you rather, but who had more fantasy points. Actually, it's pretty obvious. Brandon Aubrey. You've probably seen this recently, though, because kickers are going ballistic this year. More points, Brandon Aubrey or Justin Jefferson this year? Fantasy.
Yeah, Aubrey. I have Jefferson. He sucks.
Yeah.
One catch for 5 yards.
Brandon Aubrey, Saquon Barkley. After last night.
Well, because of the question.
Aubrey.
Brandon Aubrey or Austin Genty?
Did you say Aubrey?
Aubrey.
Aubrey's. He has more points than 3 first-round draft picks in everybody's league. A kicker.
Something's, how about those clowns?
Awesome about him, and he's my kicker.
Something's got to be done about this. This is ridiculous.
Awesome. He's my real kicker.
Well, I knew I'm a Giants fan. I knew that 64 yarder, whatever he hit in week 2. I knew that was going to be good.
Yeah,
you just knew.
No
one misses a kick against the Giants.
Only thing worse than a kicker having more points than 3 first-round picks is the NFL having a bye week in week 14.
What is that? I mean,
give me a break.
Do they think fantasy doesn't exist?
They're in bed with FanDuel and DraftKings. How do you have a bye week in week 14? Absolutely atrocious. That's just a Don Father side note. But if I had to roll on
the Giants,
because
it was the Giants.
more trivia, Mac. So I want to see if anybody at this table can guess the 4 quarterbacks with the most passing yards in a game this year. 4 quarterbacks with the most passing yards single game this year. Who the top 4 would be?
Darnold.
Mayfield.
No, no.
Mayfield.
Sanders. Bryce Young.
Shedeur Sanders, no.
He hasn't.
Bryce Young, yes. Jensen Bryce Young Josh has the fourth. He has 448 yards in the game this year. That is number 4 on the list.
Love Drake May.
Burrow, the night.
Nope.
Not Drake May.
Love?
Nope.
Wow.
Exactly. We've gone through like 8 quarterbacks already.
Not Drake May.
Huh?
Brissett had one huge
Brissett, game. Number 2. 452 yards in a game.
Did they say Dak?
They did not.
Dak.
Wrong.
Godfather, you're a jerk.
Dart?
Love it.
Nope.
No, it wasn't Dart.
He had one big game.
Flacco, number 1. 470 yards. I believe we watched that game. Jamar Chase had 45 targets that game, I believe.
Give me a hint for the last.
So who's number 3? He played against Dak. The game Dak had his highest passing yards of the year. Russell Wilson.
I knew
450 yards.
Yeah.
So put that in the back of your head. The 4 quarterbacks with the highest passing yard this year. Joe Flacco, Jacoby Brissett, Russell Wilson, and Bryce Young.
Pretty old.
4 quarterbacks. You would have not guessed one of them if you top your head to think about that. I thought that was just pretty
That's
crazy.
Interesting.
And Phillip Rivers is coming back.
Oh, I love it.
My defense is playing against him.
He's got 14 more children since he last left.
He's a grandfather.
So I want to do a mystery. Want to do a mystery player?
He's a
all right,
great grandfather.
So we're gonna do player A, player B. I'm gonna tell you, player A is Josh Allen. Okay.
Yep.
Last 50 starts. Josh Allen. If you want to put these numbers in your head, passing yards 11,750. Completion percentage 65. TD interception 86-34, passer rating 97.
So what's B? Who's the next
quarterback? B. No, this is just player B. You want to see if anybody can guess this? I'll go back to Allen. 12,665
yards.
More yards. 1,000 more yards over the last 50 games. Completion percentage 69, 4 points higher over the last 50 games. Touchdowns, interceptions.
You know what that averages, right?
89 and 69. 89 and 39 compared to 86 and 34. So pretty equal for touchdowns and interception. Yeah. Passer rating just over 100 compared to 97 for Josh Allen.
How many games?
Last 50 starts. Josh Allen was
the guy
could have
been out. And
this guy's still active playing.
No, but he could have missed some time with him.
Okay. Sure.
And he's active now.
He's active right now.
Is he a starter?
He's a
now.
Starting quarterback in the NFL right now. Yep.
50 starts. It ain't Hurts.
No.
1,000 more passing yards, 4 points more completion percentage, touchdowns and interceptions equal, 3 points higher passer rating over the last 50 starts.
Is it Rodgers?
Hell no.
It is definitely not Aaron Rodgers.
I'm not ruling out.
I'll give you AFC.
AFC?
No, AFC. Could be Burrow. 50 starts, not.
You know what?
That's why I was thinking Rodgers. He sat out a year and.
It might be Burrow,
but it's not.
Okay.
It might be, Coach. It might be, but it's not.
It's not. Okay.
I'll say comfortably it's not.
AFC.
That was me.
Kevin.
That was me.
Okay.
Sorry.
Gino?
Good. You got to get a group chuck on that, Mac. I like it.
Has Herbert started 50 games?
Oh, sure he has. Yeah.
It's not Mahomes.
Don't tell me. It can't be Herbert. Tua.
Mahomes?
Is it? Tua.
Tua?
To tell me a number. Josh, he has better numbers than Josh Allen over the last 50 games, and people act like he's a throwaway, and Josh Allen's the next greatest player in the history of the NFL right now. And I like Josh Allen, by the way. But just, I thought it was mind-blowing. They gave me, I saw this the other day. So player A, player B. I was like, I went through, Joe Burrow was one of my three guesses. I'm like, never would have guessed Tua.
I actually thought of him. I went, nah.
Well, I mean, over 50 games, he had Tyreek there.
Yeah.
Waddle.
He was a stud before he got it.
I mean, this year.
Brain is rattling around in his head, though. Like, so who cares?
Allen could use a weapon this year. I mean, he throws to his three different tight ends.
He's only had one good receiver. I mean, Diggs is the only legit.
Yeah, he's gone.
There, I mean. He hasn't done much.
By the way, side note, last time we met here.
Dave Davis was good.
Last time we met here at NBA.
Yeah, he was good there.
Don Farley made 2 points. One, I said the OKC Thunder are going to go 81-1. I'm still on track for my 81-1 prediction. Point two, I said Victor Wembanyama is still the biggest bust in NBA history. How many games has he played since the last time we met?
Zero.
Don Father, I'm Don Father.
Trailblazers almost got him a second time, though.
Almost. They almost did.
Great segue into basketball here. We're going to wrap this up with a little hoops. But Don Father.
Yo.
Very brash by saying Wembanyama is going to be a bust because I think you're out of your mind.
I'm right so far.
How are you right? Because he missed a few games?
That's part of being a bust.
You call him the GOAT.
Greg Oden was a bust because he didn't play.
I didn't call him the GOAT. I said if he's healthy and he plays. I said if he's healthy and he's playing.
Well, if my aunt had a penis, she'd be my uncle, but she doesn't. So I mean.
We're not getting into this.
Greg Oden, if he played, he could have been fantastic, but he didn't, so he wasn't.
Things now. We're not doing this.
Injuries are part of being a bust. I don't like LeBron, but the guy never got hurt for 15 years.
What kind of odds are you going to give me with OKC, too?
But that they're going to be 81-1. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying I'm on track so far. I'm pretty comfortable in my assessment. They've won the last 10 games since we met. I'm not going to bet them being 81-1. Come on.
The brash Don Father. He's got his pomade. It's his
I'll give you whatever
Vegas odds. How's that Giants bet going? How is that Giants bet going?
I think we're on track to win some money, Angry.
What's the bet? The Giants bet?
And by the way, I'm a Giants fan, by the way. Five over-under wins. Five. Yeah. Five is a push.
What do they got?
They have two. They have the number one pick right now. They have the number one
pick. Let's go Titans. That
up. Okay.
Let's go Titans.
So,
let's bring Tommy DeVito back to win a game that means nothing.
Yeah, but how many Giants fans here? Two? Three? Okay. Now, Giants get a top three pick. What do you do with it?
Trade it down to get a better offensive lineman?
I agree. Trade down. Yep.
I'm not a Giants fan, but
true. Yeah, I think we have some decent.
Because you have a stud quarterback. Yeah. You have a stud receiver coming back.
Offensive line.
I like Wandale.
He's a free agent.
You gotta sign him.
He wants like I saw it today, like 4 years, 55 million for
drop,
4 years.
Drop down, get Jeremiah Smith and offensive lineman.
We need a middle linebacker that can stop the run.
You think he's gonna go that high?
I think the new coach is gonna play an important role too. I think they gotta name the right coach.
Come out this year.
Except I saw the list.
Come out this year, I think Jeremiah, right?
I want Gruden.
Jeremiah Smith can come out this year, can he?
Next year.
No.
Oh, he's got one more still?
It's the other guy they got. Is it Tate? What's his name? No, not Tate.
I don't want Tate.
Who's the other guy they got? The
Jeremiah Smith guy. He'll be like the first pick next year. First or second.
A lot of things being chucked around the studio tonight.
You're next.
Don Father. Better get some help.
Were you talking about basketball, Mac?
Okay. Our last segment. Also brought to you by Senior Vice President, Capital Securities, Joe Moriello, who will take your money and give you a life.
Well planned.
From Madison Square Garden.
This is called Say What? And this is, again, in basketball. Oh, I'm sorry. I got to stop. Studio engineer extraordinaire, Kevin Ross.
Yes, sir.
Any update on the Charter Oak? Can we see him on the floor soon?
We're still...
He's averaging almost a double-double, right?
Yeah. He's a little sore right now, waiting to see game day decisions.
Okay.
So,
the Chinaman ain't playing or whatever he is, right?
He played the last game. He had 2 points, got knocked out by Zach Eady. Zach Eady put a clothesline to his face, broke his nose, I think. But he played better down the stretch.
But those other centers aren't a threat. It's think they won.
Time Warner never plays. So
if Rob Williams was healthy all the time, he's still pretty damn athletic when he can play.
Yeah, so. Once a week he has a nice block score. I'm not kidding. I like him. Yeah,
I love them in Boston for eight games a year.
Guys, how about UConn? Like, I don't know how to feel about him. Like, first of all, this Mullins kid can stroke it. Oh my god. Is he the best shooter we've had in a minute?
They compared him to Ray Allen the other day.
That's strong.
It was.
Is he a better shooter than Cam Spencer? Yeah.
Yes.
Who's only a 1 year husky?
No. He's made like four jump shots.
Yeah, we'll see.
Too, it's too early.
Yeah.
No, but he's
made four jumpers, and we're talking about the best jump shooter at UConn.
There's something to him.
Jesus, yeah, he's talented. Could we not could we slow down with comparing him to Ray Allen?
So much better than Ray Allen.
Ben Ray Allen. I said, who's the last guy we had that could shoot like him? Is he a better shooter than the Hawk?
The who?
Hawkins, barely.
You and Lottie made Hawkins out to be all rookie NBA. How's that working out?
They did.
Conveniently forget making fun of me when he made an 18-point game like week two, and they're like, this guy's a stud.
Yeah, you did. They did.
Thank you.
100%.
I stud me that handsome. No, but how about Hurley crying about all these preseason tournaments? He did build himself a hell of a schedule. I mean, they play no games very far from UConn. I mean, they went out to Kansas again. I get it. But, everything else is pretty close to Harvard.
Donovan said that was the hardest place to play.
Kansas?
You don't remember? Yeah. The interview with him? He said it was the hardest. So he went back there.
That was the first time they won there, right?
Yep.
First time they've ever beaten Kansas. Yeah. I mean, that last game, I felt they were right in that game. Spencer was hurt. Donovan was hurt. They only lost by, a basket right at the end. I mean,
This was a really good
one. He spoke highly of the fans, too.
He said it was the best place.
It was nonstop. He said, but those fans, they just rooted for their team, period. It wasn't against the other team. It was just electric, though.
I watched a lot of college basketball this weekend. You look at teams like Duke and Michigan State. I don't like either one of them, but the preseason schedule they play out of conference is unbelievable. Yeah. They both played three top 10 teams. I mean, they play teams over, and I can't stand either one of them, but... My God, our preseason schedule is unreal.
Well, why do teams feel the need to go to these faraway places? I mean, just to go to the beach. I mean,
is Maui? That are you talking about?
Honestly, well, no. The Bahamas. Here and on a ship. And why don't they just go to each other's venues where these students and even alumni are crazy and just let the people around in the United States have fun?
Is it a recruiting tool? We're going to the Bahamas this year.
I was just
going to
say that. That was they do say something like that they're going to do something, a trip or go somewhere, going to Europe to play a preseason thing or, it makes some of the kids want to do it, yeah.
It helps to a tournament experience, too, because you're playing, back-to-back nights against good teams. You know, you could do it like that, a preparation, especially for the good teams, like a UConn, you know? Hey, if we win this night, we're playing the next night, and, you know.
I think you guys make fair points, but why not just keep it where the fans in the U.S. can enjoy these games? You got to follow your team to freaking Hawaii. And by the way, remember back in the Denim, when Denim Brown hit that little hook shot against Gonzaga? That gym was puny. That's not tournament experience. I mean the play is, but they're playing in the center school, dude. I mean, Bob Stack rolled the freaking metal bleachers out.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you.
Ooh,
I want to hear
dissension.
Why.
We like it.
I mean,
I got one more ship than you. So I want to hear why.
Walk outside. It's miserable outside right now in the Northeast.
I get you.
I don't know. Maybe going to Hawaii isn't a bad little trip.
You a UConn fan?
Yeah, of course.
How many games have you gone to in Hartford?
In Hartford? Probably five or six.
Gamble,
two. I actually went last year when they played
Madison
Sacred
Square
Heart.
Garden,
yeah, Madison Square Garden. Been there a couple times. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many times have you been to
Well, I'm not saying as from a fan's perspective. I'm saying from a coach and player perspective. Maybe
I get that, but I'm saying who is literally paying their salaries now? The fans are the trust. People that, are fanatics because of the fans. Just let us watch the games. Let us go to the car.
I guess you're right, but...
He's wrong.
Coach, okay, he's wrong.
Coach, he's wrong.
All right.
Getting back to it. Say what? Which great Celtic, modern-day great Celtic, said, If I was a Caesar salad, the croutons would be my friends, the lettuce would be my family, and the dressing would be my mom.
Kevin Garnett.
Anything's possible. The Don Father's there. All right. Which current NBA star who never plays and has been off and on for the last 5 years?
Victor Wembanyama.
I said 5 years. So Don Father's wrong already. Horrific injury he came back from. If you look at the box score, we won this game.
Who said that?
Loss. Yeah.
That sounds like something LeBron would say, but.
Close.
Joel Embiid.
Another fraud that's overpaid.
Steph to George because they didn't all the right moves. I don't care what the scoreboard says. They won this game.
Yeah, they should have held on. That's Paul George, friends. How about one of the greatest point guards / coaches in the last 50 years said, we're going to turn this team around 360 degrees.
Kid?
One of the greatest players, our point guards / coaches last 50 years.
Jason Kidd. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said Kidd, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you said Kidd. Oh, that's good. Good job.
Which idiot, I think was a hawk, but a tremendous talent and leaper and dunker and kind of like scary guy. Our ceiling is through the roof.
Dominique.
First name, Josh.
Smith?
Yeah. Okay. Which guy that's had many names says, they better not put me in that All-Star game because I won't shoot, but I'll dominate that game easy. I'll be playing hard defense. I'll be fouling. I'll be flagrant fouling. Everyone will be like, what are you doing?
Ron Artest?
Yeah. Actually, I'm calling him Meadow.
Is it Meadow World Peace?
Which current Nick said, y'all know how we have dogs and stuff, right? So I think it was bigger people in the world before us because they had dinosaurs as pets.
Current Nick.
Played in Missouri.
Josh Hart?
No, Hart's Villanova.
That's right.
Missouri.
I don't know where OG played. I don't know where OG played.
Jordan Clarkson? He played at Missouri? Might be wrong about the college. I think I'm right.
Probably sure, he graduated with
that. Probably are. Back on your phone.
Theology guy.
Which top 20 NBA player of all time said on his poor free throw shooting, said, me shooting 40% at the foul line is just God's way to say nobody's perfect.
Shaq.
Boom. Because it was either him or Chris Dudley or Artis Gilmore. I gave it away with the top 20. Everybody, we are so happy to be back in the Don Father studio. We're happy for Phil Cuzzy stopping by. We're grateful for three-time state champion coach Vic Rinaldi, St. Paul Catholic High School.
Soon to be five.
Soon to be four. Well, let's go start with four first.
The boys on Moulton Street. Victor Wembanyama for MVP next year. The Thunder will lose two games. Angry Jay's got to come prepared. Crocker, thanks for stopping by. And studio engineer extraordinaire Kevin Ross
MVP
did some stuff tonight that you guys have no idea. And Phil Cuzzy,
he was awesome.
He really was awesome. Thanks for coming, everybody. Good night. God bless. We'll see you on the next episode.
Rock and roll.